Fine. So last week we talked about the balance between halachic and agadic text. What I want to do today is hopefully do this in one day, I hope, is talk about the three different ways that you can understand Agadah to sort of chart out the course of how we study Agadah. So as Ellie was talking about briefly before Shir started, one of the Prakim in Shas, which contains the most Agadic passages, is Perek Chelek, which in the Bavli is the final Perek, in Sanhedrin in the Yerushalmi is the second to final Perek in Sanhedrin, but it is a very lengthy chapter, both in Bavli and Yerushalmi, which contain a tremendous number of Agadot, which deal with all types of theological issues. As the Mishnah goes, right, the reason it's called Chelek is because it talks about Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek Lolam Haba, that all Jews have a portion of the world to come, and therefore deals with questions of the world to come, and proofs for the world to come, but it also deals with a series of other things, all the kings who don't have a portion of the world to come, and then stories that emerge from that. So whether you're talking about Menashe, or you're talking about Achaz, or the Gemara has a machloket about Shlomo, whether he has a Chelek in Olam Haba, and then the three Hedyotot who don't have a Chelek in Olam Haba, so stories about Bilam, and stories about Gehazi, and then it has a whole bunch of other things, discussions of Mashiach, and then all types of varied Agadot. It's a very heavy Agadic parak. So, therefore, that's where the Rambam chose to write an introduction. The Rambam has three places in Shas, where in his Perush HaMishnayot, he writes a lengthy thematic, philosophical, ethical, whatever you want to call it, introduction. One is obviously the beginning of the Mishnah, where he has a very long discussion of the nature of Misorah in his Haktov and Perush HaMishnah. His theory of ethics and their relationship to Nevuah is outlined in Shmoneh Prakim, which is his 8th chapter, as the name goes, introduction to Perkei Avot, which is in many ways structured after Aristotle's ethics. I don't know if you know Shmoneh Prakim, I don't know if you know Aristotle's ethics, but if you know both, then you will see the resemblance between them. I encourage you to read both. At Migdal, I can tell you to read both. That's fine. You can borrow, I think we have a few copies of, we definitely have a copies of the Rambam on the shelf, many, and I think we have several copies of Aristotle's ethics also. And then the third is Perek Chelek. Okay, now, the Perush HaMishnayot is one of those books that makes us all feel inferior because, the Rambam was like a teenager in early 20s when he wrote his full commentary on all of Shas and the Perush HaMishnayot, which I guess doesn't make you feel inferior because maybe with the end of Shana Aleph you'll have done that too. That'll be quite the accomplishment. But in his Akdama to Chelek, he outlines three approaches that people have to studying Agadah, two which he thinks are incorrect, and the third which is what he thinks is correct, and is his methodological approach. However, as we will note, the problem is that he never actually articulated. He writes many times throughout his writings that he plans on one day taking these theories and actually spelling it out and writing a book on Agadah, which he never does. Rav Avram ben Aramam claims that the Rambam just sort of got scared. Right? Like, he wrote the theory, and then he's like, I just can't do this. I can't do it. I just can't do it. It's not going to work. Be that as it may, his son, Rambam ben Aramam, as we'll see, does write a much more systematic Perush on Agadah. It's not in all of Agadah, but he really does try to systematize this methodology in a more extensive way. What we want to do today is at least understand the overview. Okay? What I gave you is the translation here of the Rambam Perek Chelek. The reason being, very simply, I have this crazy philosophy that if things were originally not written in Hebrew, I don't feel so guilty giving you the English translation, because the Hebrew is also a translation, and since the Perush HaMishnayot was written in what language, Shlomo? In? It's your father's expertise. Judeo-Arabic, right? This is when every so often I ask your father questions, like, what does it really mean, the Perush HaMishnayot, right? And then I'll send him the Arabic, and then I'll get an answer. But unless you're Rabbi Kropkin, then you don't know Judeo-Arabic. So therefore, I have no problem giving it to you in English. And Professor Tversky, who was a very interesting person, Dr. Isidore or Rabbi Yitzchak Tversky, who had one hat as the head of Jewish studies at Harvard and his other hat as a Hasidic Rebbe, the Tolna Rebbe, and also brother, not brothers-in-law, Mechutin, whatever that is in English. What is Mechutin in English? I don't know. Your kids are married, right? Fine. Where the Rai Soloveitchik. So he translates it in his Maimonides Reader. The Rambam does not hold his punches in this Hakdama. So he says, the first group, I'll summarize it for you outside, then we'll look at some key fun quotes. First group of people who read Agadata are, as he says, the majority of people, the largest group. Who are they? They are the stupid people who understand every midrash and every Agada literally. They are just stupid, but they're the most people. That's pretty right. Right, the first group is the largest one. I've watched them, read their books, and heard about them. They accept the teaching of the sages in their simplest literal sense and do not think that these teachings contain any hidden meaning at all. They hold these opinions because they do not understand science and are far from having acquired any knowledge. They possess no perfection which would give them their own insights, nor have they found anyone else who would provide them with a similar understanding. Therefore, they believe that the sages intended no more with their deliberate and straightforward utterances than what they understand based on their inadequate knowledge. They understand the teaching of the sages only in the literal sense, even though some of these teachings, when taken literally, would make even the uneducated, let alone sophisticated scholars, ask how anyone in the world could believe such things are true, let alone edifying. Right, so these are the people who basically, to bring it down to modern ones, and someone's going to get angry at me, but that's fine, right? Who basically read the little midrash says, and then tell you, no, literally, right? Moshe was 50 feet tall, and Obus 250 feet tall, right? And all that stuff, right? Those people. And he says, this is a little bit crazy. He said, this group are ignorant, and they can only regret their folly. And he says, here's the problem. The problem isn't just that they're not intelligent people. The problem is worse. The problem is deeper. The problem is, if you ask these people, why do you insist that the Midrash is literal? Why do you insist that Agadot are literal? What would they tell you? Because the Chazal were so great, they're so much greater than us, you can't understand, right? Who are you, right? It must be literal. And they said, they're doing this out of respect, right? Which just makes it worse, right? I mean, they're doing this because they're convinced that Chazal are so smart, so it must be, if they say that Moshe was however many meters tall, he really was, right?
Wait, but I don't understand. Why else would the common writer...
What? That's what he's trying to figure out here. Let's see what he says. That's what I'm giving you. This is why it's an introduction to Agada. We skipped this last year, Yotam, I think, because we were... Whatever. We skipped introduction to Agada. We just went into Paris and we just did Agada. So here's the introduction. Second group. He says they're also large. So he says the second group share a common denominator with the first group, which is... They believe that Chazal meant the Midrashim and Agadot literally. But they disagree with the first group in the sense they have no respect for Chazal. And they think, Chazal were the idiots because they thought all this stuff literally, and that's impossible, so they're wrong. Right? And he says that group is even worse than the first group. Those group are heretics. Right? So group one are the ones who have tremendous respect for Chazal, think everything Chazal was literal, and therefore think that all the Midrashim and Agadot are literal. That's group one. 1 second. Group two think that Chazal thought it was literal, but they're cynical and think that it's stupid, and therefore they think Chazal believed in the literal interpretation, which is stupid, and they are enlightened and do not, and therefore they reject Chazal. That's group two. Yes, sir.
I don't
think it's not accurate to say that what? No, he really does. No, he really does. This group are the ones who hold the sages in contempt, think they're more intelligent than the sages, and that the sages were simpletons who suffered from inferior intelligence. The members of this group are so pretentious and stupid that they can never attain genuine wisdom. Yeah, no, I do think that's a fair... No, I don't think so. I know the Marnevuchim. I don't think that's true. I think he really does think this group are heretics. But that's the first group. No, that's the first group. The first group he doesn't think are heretics. The second group. No, he's talking about the first group. He said there's the groups who think that Psukim are, right, that the Psukim are literal, that God is corporeal. That's foolish, right? And he also thinks it's heretical. Right? But he said that group is the people who are doing it betumat libam. They're doing it of good because they believe in Chazal. The second group don't believe in Chazal. Right? Right? This is not a group he has any compassion for. Well, no, I mean, the first group, right, no, both of them are bad. Both of them are bad for the Rambam. The first group. I mean, the first group, right, meaning the first group accept Chazal, they just think Chazal things are they're literal, which is a problem. The second group, right, think Chazal thought this stuff was literal and therefore throw everything out. Right, they just throw it all out. Right? Because, oh, the Chazal were stupid because they believe this. Right? The third group. And now the Rambam and his very wonderful... Oh, yeah, sorry.
Wait, so far, doing, like, I mean, at least people can do a religious God without it,
correct, because the Rambam has become much more influential since then. So let's see what the Rambam actually says. Okay, that's okay. Yeah, let's go to that group, right? So then the Rambam says there's the third group, which, as Kobe correctly notes, nowadays is probably more widespread. But apparently, the Rambam's time, the Rambam hadn't been written yet, so people didn't yet believe this, right? The third group, which, as the Rambam describes in his time, is a group which isn't really a group because there aren't enough people in it to be a group. Right? That's how few people it is, right? He says the members are so few in number that it's hardly appropriate to call them a group, except in the sense that one speaks of the sun as a group of which it is the only member, right? So the not so subtle implication is the Rambam thinks that at his time, the only people who believed this were a group of one, right? That he was the only person who knew the truth, right? Okay, fine. Anyway, so this group... As Kobe says, this group consists of men to whom the greatness of the sages is clear. They recognize the superiority of their intelligence from their words, which point to exceedingly profound truths. Even though this third group is few and scattered, their books teach the perfection that was achieved by the authors and the high level of truth which they had attained. The members of this group understand that the sages knew as clearly as we do that difference between the impossibility of the impossible and the existence of that which must exist. They know that the sages did not speak nonsense. And it is clear to them that the words of the sages contain both an obvious and hidden meaning. Thus, whenever the sages spoke of things that seem impossible, they were employing the style of riddle and parable, which is the mean method of truly great thinkers. For example, the greatest of our wise men, Shlomo, began his book by saying, to understand an analogy and a metaphor, the words of the wise and their riddles. So, what's the third group for the Rambam? As Kobe said, the people who say, these things sound crazy, they can't be literal, but Chazal were really smart people, and therefore, this must mean something deep. Now, this approach is, by this point in history, widely accepted, right? And it doesn't matter who you are. It's widely accepted amongst rationalists. It's widely accepted amongst Kabbalists, right? The Maharal, who is a Kabbalist, writes a Peirush on Agadah, viewing himself as going in the path of the Rambam, right? Because the fundamental insight of the Rambam, that Chazal and their Midrashim and their Agadot have some sort of deep meaning hidden in them, right? That statement can be true whether you think that deep meaning is ethical, is rational, of the rationalist philosophical school, is Kabbalistic, right, is anything else, right? It doesn't matter what you plug in there, right? The basic methodological approach that Chazal are speaking in metaphor or code, right, and that the true meaning has to be unpacked, right, that can be shared amongst people of many different philosophies. Well, that's why the Rav Avraham Ben Aramim, like I said, the Rambam doesn't do this, but Rav Avraham Ben Aramim will do next, right, goes through and he divides Agadot into different categories, and he says, okay, these are the type of Agadot that you look for philosophy. These are the type of Agadot that are just meant as aphorisms, and there's not much there. These are the ones that are just entertaining stories. These are the things that are just wrong. Right? That are just meant to be wrong. They're just meant to wake you up. Right? That they were just things that, like, the rabbis threw out to wake people up. Right? We have a few examples where the Gemara explicitly says that. That the rabbis, like Rabbi Akiva, said crazy things that make no sense just to people who were falling asleep in cheer. So he said something crazy and everyone jumped out of their seats and said, ah! He said, yes, I know that's the point. It's stupid. Can we move on with the real Torah? Right? Like, okay. So he goes through all the different categories of Agadah. You're right. It's not every Agadah. Right? This is where the Rambam is different from Avraham and Rambam. Right, where the Rambam just says, people believe in general, right, it's important to believe in general that Chazal means something deep. Rambam and Rambam says, wait, there's different types of Agadot, right? Sometimes that's what's going on, and sometimes that's not what's going on, right? Correct, and he says, my father said he meant to write a Peirush, and then he got scared, and he never did, so here's my attempt at expanding on that. That's exactly the point. But even Rambam and Rambam didn't write a systematic Peirush on all of Agadot, he just spelled it out a little bit more. There are later Mefarshim who follow the Rambam and do this, right? Right? But really writing systematically in Agadah is a much later enterprise, right? The Maharal does do it. That's hundreds of years later, and that's more Kabbalistic, right? And the Marsha does it, but that's also a different methodology, right? And, you know, all the Perushim on the Yaakov, right? The whole day. But again, they all follow different methodologies. But you're right. It's problematic. And part of what we're going to do this year is try to figure it out, right? We're not going to, like, come to a conclusion every Agadah. We're going to start learning some Agadot to get you used to it. And if this year, if the past is any indication of what this year will look like, Migdal guys provide wonderful insights, and we come up with great chidushim. At least in one case, yeah, I remember we had one person who was just, it blew everyone away. When I shared his insights with Rabbi Blau, who's like the reigning expert on Agadah, he's Rosh Shiva a writer, but he wrote a book on a Sefer on Agadah. He was like, yes. Yacholiyot, I think that's true. I feel like I remember, I feel like I remember Ray Walkenfeld posting that at some point. Like we're very excited that Rabbi Blau was here. Probably something like that. That makes sense. Yeah, he came and spoke two years ago here. That sounds right. That sounds right. He's wonderful. Yes, Zach. Are you asking me to get in trouble? Do I think that they're still? I have met many of them, so I'm going to assume yes. I mean, if you know, I understand that that's like, you know, I'm biased. I understand that in basic statistics, right? My anecdotal evidence is not proof for anything, but the number of people just in my, which wasn't everybody, but the number of people who over the years of my speaking in Toronto who approached me and called me a co-fair does indicate that that there are at least some people, thank God, many of them were visitors to Toronto who are not used to me, and they're like, you can't possibly mean that. I'm like, no, I really do. I'm like, not even saying anything really controversial. It's okay, your father usually stood up for me. It was okay. Your father wasn't a fan if people called me a co-fair. I thanked him for, you know, being my shield. So yes, anecdotally, I will tell you that yes, there are still people who believe this. Well, we're going to get there. Are you jumping ahead? You think I'm hiding things from you? Well, what am I? I'm not. What did I tell you? I don't try to bias you. I mean, maybe I try to bias you a little bit, but I'm not trying to hide anything from you. I'm not like one of those people who are like, oh, the Rambam said it, let's close the book, now let's go learn it, right? No one ever said anything different, it never happened. Oh, it never happened. It's not my approach. Yes, I will show you. Just give me a minute, okay? Okay, I'm going to skip for a minute. The second source, but suffice it to say that the Rambam in his introduction to the Mishnah goes through this as well, though he does spell it out a little bit more, right? He takes some examples of Agadot and what exactly they're doing. But to answer Zach's question, let's skip. Does anyone disagree with the Rambam? The answer is, as to be expected, as much as the Rambam thinks that one group are idiots and one group are heretics or whatever, right? Fikitsur. Obviously, there were very significant people who celebrated approach one and celebrated approach two, or not quite, but, you know, lo rachok. Okay? Yes, there were. Who were these people? So as we'll see, they have some big names, like Shmuel ben Chofni Gaon, Rishir Gaon, Rashi, Tosfot, things like that. Right, very, very minor names in the history of Jewish thought. Fine, but let's look, for example, look at Rav Shmuel ben Chofni Gaon, okay? He writes in number 3, the Haggadah. What do I say about the Haggadah? Kol perusha yavu b'talmud al shum minyan shlo yeh mitzvah. Anything that Chazal say that is not a mitzvah, not halacha, zohi Haggadah. That's Haggadah. Okay, good. Now, what does he say? What should we do with Haggadah? Again, this is Rav Shmuel ben Chofni Gaon. We're not talking like some modern reformer or whatever, right? Throw whatever derogatory phrase you want at them. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Shmuel ben Chofni Gaon. Before. He is a Gaon. Yeah. He's, Shmuel ben Chofni, the exact years of him. Let's see, Shmuel ben Chafni Gaon is, let's see, oh no, I don't have internet here, so you can look it up. He writes as follows, Ein lechalu mod mimena ella al ma she'ya'ale al hadat. What does that mean? Only rely on it based on whatever is reasonable to you. That's it. I mean, some of it makes sense, and if it doesn't, okay, nishkafirlach. Not a big deal. Right, not a big deal. Yes. The Yezel Chaladad, he says, you should know. Shekol ma'ashikimu chazal halacha binyan ha-mitzvah, she'im ipi Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom. Anything which is halachic is from Moshe. Shekimu mi'gvi ha-gur, which came from God. Ve'ein lecha lahosiv alav ulolagram imenu. And you can't add or subtract. Avo ma'ashapirish be'psukim kol echad. But what they even said in the psukim, right, how they understood the psukim, kifi ma'ashin is damilo, ma'asharav bedato, is whatever he thought at the time. Ulufi ma'ashiyal al-dad min ha-purishim ha-ilu lom dimotam. Whatever you think makes sense, so learn them. Vashar, whatever you don't, and zomchen alav, so don't rely on it. He's saying whatever is it their opinion. You don't like it, so don't take it. Leave it. Take it or leave it. Again, this is his simple read. He says you like them, they make sense to you. Great. They don't make sense to you. Okay. What? Not halacha. Not halacha. Halacha, he says, halacha moshe mitzina, everything from God. Right? Non halacha. Whatever. Whatever they said, they said. What do you want from me? Right? Rishrei Ragon as well. Like, you know, that this is like, Rishmul ben Chafni Gaon important. Rishrei Ragon, we're talking like, Dole Hagaonu. Right? This is like, one second. He writes, look, Omer Mar Shreira, right? It's quoted in the Eshkol, Hani Mili Dinafke Mipsuke Umikri Midrash Vagada Umdunaninu. All the things that you get from Psukim, the Agadot, it's an approximation. Yesh man shukach, going to Rabbi Yehuda, binyan v'zot Yehuda. Right, he gives all types of examples. And then he says, on his last line, v'lochein einanu samchin al divrei Agadah. And that's, therefore, we don't rely on the Agadah. V'anachon meyem ma'ashim mitchazek v'naseichom v'nakram v'divreihem v'in sof u'tchilet l'agadot. Right? U'tchilet l'agadot. It's whatever. Right? Whatever makes sense to you, great. And if it doesn't, it's not binding.
But what do you think they're approximations?
Meaning, it's their guesses, estimations. It's what they felt. And if you don't like it, whatever. Is it, now, this is not quite the Rambam's second group. That's unfair. He doesn't think Chazal are stupid, right? That's not what he says. He just says, doesn't make sense to you, so big deal. Right? Meaning, he has no problems, right? It's not quite the Rambam's second group. It's not like, oh, Chazal were stupid. He's just saying, listen, Chazal were smart, but they said things that were wrong, and that's okay. And doesn't make sense to you? Okay, doesn't make sense to you. Don't worry about it too much. One second, let me just finish my thoughts. One second. Okay, let me just get my thoughts out, then I'll take questions, okay? The Ramban also says this. However, it's very unclear the Ramban meant it. Because the Ramban says it, the Gaonim say it, claim it seemingly in a more serious context. The Ramban says it in his famous dispute, right? Where, right, he was brought to a dispute to defend the rabbinic tradition from... Who was his disputant?
And
Pablo Christiani. Right, Pablo Christiani, right, who was an apostate Jew. Among the things that he was doing was bringing Agadah to show that A, Judaism was stupid, B, that we killed Jesus and hated Jesus and all types of terrible things, right? Yeah, exactly. And then Mashiach already came, right? The position of one position in the Gemara and Chalek. All types of things, right? They were using to disprove Judaism, to undermine Judaism, and all that. In that context, the Ramban writes, after all those different things, right, that the Mashiach already came, right, as Zach said, right, that's his first one, that Pablo Kishriani said, oh, the Midra, the Agadah in Sanhedrin says that Mashiach already came. So he just says, exactly. So what does the Ramban say? So he says in that context, just if you skip down to the last line, he says, it's from an Agadah, and I don't believe it. Now again, does the Ramban, in a polemical context, can you really derive anything? Not necessarily. Okay? It might be that he does mean it, might mean he doesn't, I don't know.
Thank you.
No, no, Nechami. It's part of an argument. It's part of a polemic. He had several arguments. Maybe he did mean it because he is, among other arguments, maybe he didn't. It's very unclear. But okay, this is the context that he said it in. Fine, yes. Well, that will deal with the Ravon Ben Arava, right? Where he's going to go through them. Where there are ones which are philosophical. There are ones which are about metaphysics. Some about ethics. Some about inspiration. Some about, right, practical advice. We'll see. Right? There's all different types of agadah. One second.
I have two questions.
Yes, Zach.
Give a second, then you can move on. I
thought
about that.
Where he seems to what? Yes, because the Ramban has different things, and he also, it's not clear. Some of the writings of the Ramban and Agadah are not really him. The ones in Kitvei Ramban are not all him. Some are from his teachers, Ezra and Azriel of Gerona, who were some of the early Kabbalists in Catalonia. So it's very unclear. Yes, there are different voices in the Ramban, 100%. And not all of it is the Ramban. Yes, 100%. If you want to talk about the Kabbalism and what those writings are, the Pirush Agadah in the Kitvei Ramban, if I remember correctly, is Azriel of Gerona. One of them is Ezra, one of them is Azriel. Okay? But yeah, sure, there are passages in the Ramban where he doesn't sound this way. Enoch Hanami. Yes. No, he would probably say, listen, everyone has to think, right? He wouldn't say it's stupid. He would say, okay, so people had opinions. No, not everyone. People can be wrong. That doesn't undermine them, doesn't mean they're stupid. It just means they're wrong sometimes. That's what he would say. And you'd say, because people have different opinions. I don't know. People are good at certain disciplines and not other. I don't know what he would say. I do remember once, a long time ago, when I was in 12th grade, I went for Shabbos to Penn. It was fun Shabbos. Whatever they call it, the pre-frosh or whatever they called it then, which was like people who were, you know, checking out colleges. It was, at the time, in Rambam, it was like a epidemic of MTSY Shabbatones. And Rabbi Friedman got very annoyed with people who skipped on Friday, so he was like cracking down on people leaving early. So I remember Rabbi Friedman, he asked me, because I was going to go, I was actually, you know, I was obviously like too good to go without asking his permission, right? But Rabbi Friedman called me to his office, and he's like, listen. He's like, I can't really make an exception for you. So here's the choices, right? You could not go, or you can go, and listen, like, we'll officially give you detention so that we can say we're being fair. But you can do whatever you want in detention. I really don't care, right? But I have to officially give you detention. But then eventually came up with a compromise that I would go, but I was officially going as Rambam's representative and reporting back to him. So that was the compromise we worked out. I remember I went for Shabbos, and there was one guy there who, like, was extremely cynical, or in the Rambam's language, was part of group two. Right, I don't know, right? And like, I don't know why, but someone was giving a shiur on Agadah or something, and like, he saw me, and like, he wanted to get me, right? Like, he comes over to me, he's like, kid with the payas, what do you think? Or he just wanted me to like, say, oh, that's heretical, right? But I already had been, I guess, dabbling in, I was dabbling in Agadah, so like, before he said it, so as soon as he said it, I said, well, it's already in Rav Shera and Rav Shmuel and Chafnigon. So like, okay, I mean, maybe we don't agree with it, but it's not so controversial. And he like, his jaw dropped, and then he just went away, which is good, because I'd have to deal with him for the rest of Shabbos. Like, it was this assumption I had payas, so clearly, like, I was going to get offended by someone saying, like, a midrash, what? Yeah, exactly. Oh, Haredi, it's like, what? What? Yeah. Like, I had the same that I do now, behind my ears. Right now, you can't see because my hair's just a mess. You know, that's often a problem also. This has been a problem since I was in Shana Aleph, where, like, before I was in Shana Aleph, I lived at home, my parents reminded me to get a haircut. Once I was in Shana Aleph, I sort of forgot to get haircuts, and then, now I forget to get haircuts, plus it's like Corona, so it's annoying to get haircuts, plus I'm like balding, so like, it's like part of my hair grows and part of it doesn't. So like, you know, fine. So like the pants get hidden. But in a Hanami. So, you know, But yes, he was very convinced I was Haredi and like he was going to get me. I was like, looks can be deceiving. I don't know. I mean, I think that happened, at a different point. And then, I don't know the context, but I think then I quoted like line and verse in Kant. And then, they just went away. Right? I have pay. Yes, I also, right? I also am like well-read in, general philosophy. Rambam, okay, but Rambam says a gonim say it, whatever. Anyways, I wonder where that person is. I don't know. He wasn't very nice. I had a great Shabbos, but that guy was not very nice. There were other things that weren't so nice about that Shabbos. Suffice it to say that a good from yeshiva boy, which I still was, even if I, wasn't as charedi as my payas may have indicated, still was uncomfortable at a secular college like Penn on Halloween night. Just saying. It was not exactly my scene. Okay. At this point in my life, I've spent one Shabbos at Halloween in Penn and another one at NYU. And I've got to say, both of those are scarring experiences. Well, at least in one case, they were convinced I was dressed up, but that's because I was walking next to a friend of mine who was a foot taller than I am. And it was like very, that wasn't the scarring thing. I don't care about that. It was the combined average of clothes that was, whatever. When I'm not on recording, I can tell you what happened on that Shabbos. What? No, you can't hear. You can't be heard from here. But yes, I record my shirim because people listen after. What? No, very rarely do I read. Your questions can very rarely be heard, right? Sometimes they can be. Me, I'm not usually afraid. If people want to get angry at me for what I say, go ahead. All right? And if something's really offensive, every so often it won't make it up.
Are you ever going to be able to move inside this?
Well, right now, probably eventually, but I still have a kid in Bidus, so we're still... Maybe. And then inevitably there'll be somebody who will say, oh, I heard a question. Who said that? I won't tell you. There are people who do that. Okay. So there are these people, maybe not as extreme as the Rambam would put it, but people who did really think, look, you don't really have to take them seriously. On the other extreme, were there Rishonim, as Zach said before, who embraced the more simplistic view, who just said, listen, Chazal said it, it's true. It sounds weird to you. That's your problem. Chazal were smarter than you. Deal. The answer is yes, right? And in many ways, that seems to be the approach of many Chachmei Ashkenaz, Rashi, Balei HaTosfot. Rabbi Dr. Moshe Shoshan summarizes the approach here, and I gave you a few examples. He says the Ashkenazic approach, Rashi and the Balei HaTosfot. A very different approach to the relationship between halakha and agadah has been attributed to Rashi and the Balei HaTosfot, the leading rabbinic figures of medieval Ashkenaz, the geographic area roughly equivalent to modern France and Germany. In their commentaries on the Talmud, Rashi and Balei HaTosfot do not appear to make any qualitative or methodological distinctions between halachic and agadic passages. They go straight through the Talmudic text, seeking to clarify its meaning and reconcile with other rabbinic sources. Thus, they seem to recognize the agadic sections of the Talmud as no less authoritative than the halachic ones. Indeed, many scholars believe that at least some sections of the Talmud are no less authoritative than the halachic ones. Indeed, many scholars believe that at least some medieval French authorities, including perhaps Rashi himself, accepted face value even those agadot that describe God as having a physical body.
What do you mean accepted as
literally? So again, as you said, many attribute that. Now, what proof do they have of this in Rashi? Mostly that Rashi just reads through it and never comment, they treat it like any other text and they try to reconcile, so does Tosfot, and they don't say, and this is a mashal, and this is a, they don't, right? The strength of this approach is that it meets the Talmudic text on its own terms. It does not seek to impose an artificial or overly rigid distinction in halachic and agadic passages that are right next to each other on the page of the Talmud, which goes back to what we said last week, right? Meaning this very sharp distinction of Rosh Aragon and Shmuel ben Chavnigon that halacha, halacha Moshe Mitzinai, agadah, whatever you want, don't take it seriously. That only works if you really think halacha and agadah are like fundamentally distinct. But if you don't, it's very hard to have two completely different methodologies. So one second, you'll see. Neither does it seek to interpret Agadah through the prism of a systematic rational theology that would have been quite foreign to the authors of the Talmud, i.e. the Rambam. On the other hand, not the authors of the Talmud. The Rambam was not the author of the Talmud, meaning the rational approach that the Rambam would have taken. On the other hand, Rashi and Bali Tosfot appear to demand that we accept every agadic statement, at least from the Talmud, as true and normative, just like the halachic statements of the Talmud. This is indeed a tall order. In its most radical formulation, such an approach would demand that we check our rational faculties at the door of the Beit Midrash before endeavoring to study Agadah. All we can do is read the Agadah and accept its simple meaning as the truth, regardless of the challenges that might be raised against it. Now, as an extreme, I noted here the position that Ginsburg will deal with at some point this year, of Ramosha Taku, who is one of the Balei Tosfot, who is very insistent that God had a body, and anyone who believes otherwise is a heretic. He's very insistent. I remember once, at least when I was looking this up, it had not yet been printed. In order to look at it, you had to, like, I had to go to the library and find the Xerox copy of the manuscript, because I didn't want to believe it, right? But it's there. And what? Well, not only that God had a body, but that God had a body, and it's problematic or even heretical to believe that he doesn't have a body. Right. Yes, that's what he says. He said the Rambam is extremely problematic. It's heretical. Huh? You're denying God's existence by saying he doesn't have a body. Right? Something like that. Like I said, Rabbi Ginsburg deals with Moshe Taku. I don't. You can take it out of Rabbi Ginsburg. He likes dealing with Moshe Taku. What? What do you want? Ramosha Taku bothers you? He bothers me too. What do you want? Yeah? That what? That he, yeah. No. It's not, the Ramosha Taku, it's not. That's fine, I've read it in the manuscript. I don't know why you need to go out of your way to defend Ramosha Taku. If he wants to, good for him. He's a very big Talmud Chacham, he's allowed to do whatever he wants. What? He's a very big Talmud Chacham, he has every right, and he's very thoughtful in philosophy. He's written Sfarim on Machshava. He's very well known. If he wants to try to defend it, he has every right. I don't have to agree. But look, there are people who are not serious. He is a very serious person. He's a very, very serious person. Everything he does is serious. Whether you agree with him or not, he's a very serious person. Very thoughtful. I'm a big fan. He was what, your principal in high school? It's very, very serious, Talmud Chacham. Very impressive, Talmud Chacham. Yeah, he's very cool. Anyways. He's just like one of those amazing, like, wonderful people who, like, straddles different worlds. Like, he's sort of in the yeshivish world, but really open and really, really, like, open to everything and really philosophically sophisticated. And, like, he really straddles multiple worlds. He's very cool. Okay. Now, in this sense, the Ashkenazic position is therefore the opposite of the Gaonim. Now, how can I prove this, that they actually believe this? So it is hard to actually prove. Many people do. I'll give you a few examples where it does seem to be that way. We don't have so much time because of this sticha thing, but I'll give you an example. Skip for a second to 9. The Gemara at the end of Tan, it says, Amar Ula Bira'a Amar Rabbi Elazar, Atira Kadosh Baruch Hu Lasot Mechol Atzadikim Yoshev Benehem Gan Eden. God, right, source 9, top of the last page. What? The last Gemara in Tanya. Yeah, exactly. That the God will put the, right, have a dancing circle of the righteous, and they'll be sitting in Gan Eden, and they'll be pointing to God with their finger and saying, Mare Betzbao, Shnei Marva, Marva Yamahu, Inei Elokeinu, Zeh, this is our God, Kivinu No Levi Yoshenu, Zeh Shem Kivinu No Nagila Minish Mechavo Bishu, Bishu Ato. Well, 1 second. Good. So when I asked Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Kanterfogel, who is one of the world's leading experts in the Balei Tosfot, I said, give me a good example from the Balei Tosfot. He said, this is a good example, where if you look, it's a very simple one. Look at Tosfot. Tosfot just says, Mar'eh, kol echad mar'eh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu betzbao, Shneamar, Hinei Elokeinu Zeh, Kivinu Lo. He just clarifies. It means that everyone points to God. That's what it means. They point, where are they pointing to? To God. Right? And he says, if you look at this Agadah, there's no, like, fanfare. It's not like they say, literal, not literal. They just sort of look at it, and they do what they do with any other Gemara. What are they pointing to? God! Right? Like, they don't bother clarifying. They're like, you know what it means. They're pointing at God.
People explain that by saying that everyone is pointing to their own version of God.
Yeah, but the point is, when you just read them, they don't say philosophically. They just say, what are they pointing at? Oh, what it means? They're pointing at God. And that's what it means. And if you read them without an agenda. Wait a second.
Why would he need to say anything?
Well, the point is, if you read them without an agenda, it sounds like, what are they doing? They're taking it literally and they're clarifying it. What they thought was unclear there, I'm not really sure. Right? No, meaning, but a clarifying agenda. Meaning they were just like, what do these words mean? Not like, right, they weren't trying to say, oh, and it really means, right? None of that. They don't care. Yeah. Right? If you look at another example, look at number 7 from the Rosh Mishans, quoted in the Ramah. This is probably a better example. How could you say that the Agadah is not what it doesn't mean what it says it means? Now, I should explain to you. The Rosh Mishans is arguably one of the three most important Baliyat Tosfot. Okay? Like, you know, Dr. Kanefogel puts him in the big three. Rabbeinu Tam, the Re, and the Rosh Mishans. Right? Like, Rosh Mishans is super, super important. Has some of the most authoritative Baliyat Tosfot. He's the only Baliyat Tosfot to write consistently on Kodshim, Tarot, Zroim. Right? Like, he's very serious. And he just says, how dare you think that we shouldn't take Agada as it says? How dare you? Im Kain, Beperek HaMochar Esmina. What's his proof? His proof is the following. If you look at number 8, I'll show it to you inside. The Gemara in 8, we're running out of time, so we'll do it very quickly. I'll do it in English. It says, and your gates are of precious stones. This should be understood in light of that incident where Rabbi Yochanan sat and taught. In the future, the Holy One, blessed be He, will bring precious stones and pearls that are 30 by 30 cubits, and He will hollow them out in a hole of 10 by 20 cubits and set them in the gates of Jerusalem. A certain unnamed student sneered at him, saying, now we do not find precious stones even the size of an egg of a dove, and yet all of this we will find? After a period of time, the student's ship went to sea, and he saw the ministering angel sitting and sawing precious stones and pearls that were 30 by 30 cubits, and hollowed out in them were holes by 10 of 10 by 20 cubits. He said to the angels, for whom are these? They said to him that in the future the Holy One, blessed be He, will place them in the gates of Jerusalem. Later, the student came before Rabbi Yochanan and said to him, continue to interpret, my teacher. It is fitting for you to interpret, as I saw, as you said. Rabbi Yochanan said to him, worthless man, if you had not seen, you wouldn't have believed. Clearly you are mocking the statement of the sages. Rabbi Yochanan set his eyes upon him, and the student was instantly killed and turned into a pile of bones. So the Rosh Mishans looks at his Agadah and says, wait a second. If you think you're allowed to take things not literally, so what's the problem? The student could just say, I thought you meant it as a metaphor. It turns out you meant it literally, right? But he says, no. The problem was, the simple read of the Gemara is, the problem was Rabbi Yochanan meant it literally. The student was all philosophical. That's exactly right. So he points to this and he says, aha, you see that. So what you have basically is as follows to summarize. The Rambam describes three groups. Those who take it literally, those who take it literally but think it must be wrong, right? And those who understand that there's a deeper meaning, right? He says the first two groups are wrong, third group is right. However, arguably the Baliyat Tosfot are much closer to the first group, right? Where they think that Agadot should be taken literally. The Gaonim are arguably decently close to the second group, right? Where they basically say, like, okay, I mean, whatever. You don't want to take it or leave it, which is not quite Chazal were stupid, but it's, you don't have to take it so seriously. And then there's the Rambam. Now, let me just get a few points out, and then you can, very few minutes of questions before Ravashi starts, okay? Now, first point is, what? The Rosh Mishant is a Baliyat Tosfot, yes. Rosh Mishans is a Baal HaTosfot, yes. Okay. Now, first of all, as I said before, you don't have to be a rationalist to take the Rambam's approach. The Kabbalists also take the Rambam's approach, right? What they think the Agadah is trying to tell you in its metaphor is different, but the belief that Agadah is not meant to be taken literally but hides certain philosophical truths is in many ways common to the rationalist philosophers and the Kabbalists, and therefore, right, the Maharal in that sense believes that he's going in the path of the Rambam, even though he's providing a Kabbalistic interpretation to the Agadah. Okay? So again, the structural argument does not depend on the content you fill it in with. Is that clear? Okay, that's point one. Two is that not everybody believes that the Gaonim meant what they said they meant. And I gave you here a link with a summary, an article by Yoshevat Nivo and others, Some people think the Gonim did mean it. Some think that that's just a polemic against the Karaites, because the Karaites were using Agadot against them, so they basically polemically said, nah, Agadot, don't worry about it. But they didn't really mean it, right? So it's possible the Gonim didn't quite mean it. It's possible. It's possible some think that, no, they really did mean it, but maybe they were influenced by outside philosophies, all types of discussions going on in the Gonim. The Maharal thinks that the Gonim basically mean the same as the Rambam. So when they say don't take it seriously, they don't mean don't take it seriously, they mean don't take it literally. As I already noted, the Maharal seems to be a continuation of the Rambam in many ways, and I gave you an article from Chakira by Chaim Eisen where he makes this point. What other points do I want to make before we finish up? Because I'm already going over time here. The last thing I mentioned already in number 16 was that the Rambam did plan on some point writing a book on Agadah. He never got around to it. If you want to see that passage, you can look at number 16. That's the Rambam in the Mordechuchem, where he promises you that one day he'll do it, and he doesn't, which is a shame. There's one more thing I wanted to say about this. All right. If you want a very simple way of sort of framing it, which came from politics, but at this point it's a few years ago, but I thought it was a helpful way of thinking about Agadah. At some point in the news, the way they described the machloket between the pro-Trump supporters and the anti-Trump supporters was that the anti-Trump supporters took him literally, but not seriously, right? Meaning, everything they said, they thought he was going to do exactly as he said, right? And they thought that what he said literally was crazy, and therefore they hated him for it. And many of his supporters took him seriously, but not literally, right? Which is that they thought what he said had meaning, they just didn't think that he meant exactly what he said. He was speaking in hyperbole, and they were willing to give him the benefit of the doubt that what he meant was deeper. Now, that was before he actually was president, at which point everyone has drawn their own conclusions of which one was right. What? That's not my point. I don't want to get into politics. I thought the formulation was helpful, right? We're basically... I don't want to get into the politics, right? That wasn't the point. The point here... What? Yes. The point was simply that I think that that's a fair interpretation, was that the Rambam thinks that the heretical people take Chazal literally but not seriously, right? They think they're being literal, and that's why they don't take them seriously. And the Rambam says, no, you have to take them seriously, but not literally. That's the whole point, right? Which I think is a nice formulation. This has nothing to do with my politics. You cannot conclude anything of that, whether I like President Trump or I didn't like President Trump, right? It's like... Okay, so you don't like him. Okay, I don't care. I mean... I honestly, you know, I don't care. It was enough of a war last year when the election happened in the pro and whatever. What? It was a mess. I meant here in Yeshiva. I wasn't in America. I'm just saying in Yeshiva. In America, I know it was a mess. What?
You can only imagine.
I don't want to imagine. I was dealing with the fifth, however many elections we had here. I had enough of my own politics. Okay?
Especially being the only kid in the class
who vote. Okay. If it's not halachic, you have to take it seriously, but not literally. No, the ones the Rambam rejects, right, these things are heretical, are the people who take it literally, but not seriously, meaning who say, Chazal must have meant it literally, and therefore they must be stupid. Right? That's the worst group for him. Right? Then there are the people who take it literally and seriously, who he doesn't like. But they're just like the naive people. Well, for him, that's how he understands. No, meaning that's very close to the positions that the Chachmei Ashkenaz have, which the Rosh Mishnah attributes to Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara, yes. And the Gonim are more on the cynical side, at least simply taken, though again, not everyone agrees that that's what the Gonim mean. Okay, what we'll do next time is Ravram and Arambam, where we're going to... 1 second. We're just going to go through the different types of Agadot, which ones are meant to be taken this way, which are meant to be literally, which, again, all the different types. We'll try to do that in one setting, just sitting to sort of run through it. It's a very long ma'amar, but we won't read it all inside. And then hopefully once we've done enough introduction, we can launch into actually Agadot, and then you can fight me out on different Agadot and see how we actually understand them. But now I'm really taking Rabbanu's time, and that's not nice, so I'm not gonna do it.